Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. When a violent sex offender is done with his prison sentence, he's not just set loose into the community. That offender is put into a system called civil confinement. The Supreme Court has ruled that civil confinement is constitutional, but that doesn't give the judicial system a blank check to keep people under lock and key forever and without due process, which makes new revelations about the Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management all the more worrisome. The office appears to have been mismanaged and unaccountable, and there might be serious problems with how this program of civil confinement was run here in Texas, that it could open the state up to a constitutional challenge. Joining us to discuss the issues at the Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management, State Senator John Whitmire. He's a Democrat from Houston, and Senator Whitmire serves as the chair of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee. And Mike Ward, he's the Houston Chronicle's Austin Bureau senior reporter. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Senator Whitmire, what are your concerns right now about the Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management?
Well, it has two elements. One, the substantive purpose of the agency, the policy of trying to protect the public from some of the most dangerous individuals that have completed their prison sentences. In the past, we've actually had some of those individuals swear that they plan to continue to be predators. So it, in my judgment, when it was created, the concept of confinement or supervision might be a better term of these individuals was well intended, and if carried out properly, would be good. Unfortunately, and it was going to be very small in scale, a lot of supervision of 10, 20 people. But it has grown through the years. I think I saw the number 340 approximately have gone through the program. So the first issue is the substantive policy of why you created the agency, the need. But number two, now we've got alarming reports of how the agency has been operated, not only in terms of how it deals with these clients, but also, quite frankly, from the business side of the agency in terms of people showing up or not showing up, personnel records or no personnel records. And apparently the agency was totally out of control, which we read about in the press. I've been doing this a long time. It's hard to fix things or deal with issues if you don't know about them. And I had no knowledge that this was such a dysfunctional agency.
Mike Ward, Houston Chronicle, Austin Bureau senior reporter. Tell me what's going on. What's the breakdown at the Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management? They had no computers. That's one thing I read.
They had no computers. Most all the employees worked from home. And from what the agency employees have told us, there was very little, if any, central office management. When the new director went in, she found her office, the executive director's office, was full of storage boxes, and there were dead crickets on the floor. I've been covering state government for a long time, and I've never quite seen an agency in this condition.
Did you get eyes on? Did you go take a look at it?
I did. I went out there and put the eyeballs on the office and was surprised. They had three employees who worked in the central office on a continuing basis in Austin, and they were in separate small cubicles in the same room, but not close to each other. And the records, they haven't been able to find records. They had three phones, one for each desk, and the phones didn't interconnect, so you couldn't transfer a call. It was kind of amazing.
So it seemed like there are two stories here. One of them is just a state agency that it's not really functioning very well and people aren't showing up for work and that. And then there's this whole other issue of like, this is not just guys who are, you know, trying to make sure that the programs are printed at some whatever. They're in charge of making sure that these violent sex offenders don't get out into the public. So State Senator, that's critical.
Yeah, obviously that's our highest priority. I mean, it's kind of unfortunately, and I think unfortunate about the business side of it, and I think people ought to be held accountable. And I've actually asked for an audit and for a district attorney investigation. But getting back to the most serious part of the subject is there are some individuals that have been identified that have served their prison sentence, each and every day of it. If you got a 10-year prison sentence, you've served a haul, as it's referred to, and they have still been diagnosed as predators. Perhaps the term's been overly and maybe too generally used by this agency. That's to be determined by the new administration. But I don't think there's any doubt that there have been individuals identified that would not be safe on Texas streets. So in 98, a number of states moved in this direction. It's been allowed by the federal courts to do a civil commitment where they are supervised 24/7 to protect the public. Now, there is an issue developing as to none of our approximately 340 have graduated from the level of supervision. There are attorneys and others beginning to make a pretty sound case that the agency may be not functioning to the level of getting them treatment and allowing them to become productive taxpayers under certain conditions. I actually think in Fort Worth Halfway House, there's a couple of individuals who leave and go to work, and they're proven to be pretty successful, productive citizens with certain safeguards. So I think it's totally under review. I think the new administrator is going to look for a treatment mode that would prove more successful. And if you don't, it would not shock me that a federal court someday says, whoa, this double jeopardy, you can't lock people up twice. You really are not dealing in good faith to improve their mental, emotional state. And in fact, you're just punishing them the second time. If that was ever to be determined, you would destroy the program, which I think most people think, if run properly, is a good one.
Right. We're looking at the 2010 Supreme Court decision, U.S. versus Comstock, and in the 72 decision, the Supreme Court ruled that programs like this are constitutional, but there has to be some sort of a limit and being able to make sure that people are still entitled to a due process. And we're afraid of letting that not happen. All right, we're going to take a break real quickly. We'll take our phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got something to say about this Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management and the system of civil confinement or restriction, we want to hear from you. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas Office of Violent Sex Offender Management is a small department in the scheme of things in Texas, but it has a big job. Their job is to make sure that violent sex offenders who have been completed their prison sentence or who do not get out in the community if they're still a risk of reoffending. With me to talk about problems that have been recently revealed at this office, State Senator John Whitmire, a Democrat from Houston. He's also the chair of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, and Mike Ward. He's the Houston Chronicle Austin Bureau senior reporter. So, Mike Ward, there have been problems with this office before. Is that what led you to start taking another look at it?
Well, how this whole situation came to light was that this agency made the decision to move almost three dozen of these high-risk offenders out of a halfway house in Houston where they were filling beds that were needed for regular inmates who were transitioning to the community, to move those inmates into a boarding house that didn't meet local codes and without any notice whatsoever to the neighbors. And so the neighbors woke up one morning and got several dozen cards, postcards in the mail notifying them that these sex offenders were moving into this boarding house across the street or in their neighborhood. And they started asking questions, and one thing led to another. Local legislators, including Senator Whitmire and others, happened. And then we found out that at the same time, the agency was working on a facility to in rural Liberty County to potentially house up to 100 of these people, again, without any kind of public notice or any kind of advance notice to legislators, legislative leader. And so one question led to another, led to another, led to another, before we are with executive.
All right, so you started peeling away at the onion. The more you peel away, the more we're finding, and it's not pretty. We're going to go to the phone lines. Our number is 210-614-8980. Let's get John on the air. John, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. John, go ahead.
I'm a physician who conducts evaluations for defendants who are being considered for such commitments. And one thing that's happened in recent years is that the threshold for likelihood of future recidivism has been lowered in Texas, substantially lower than other states. So, for example, there are some experts that are currently testifying that their definition of likely is more than a mere possibility, which pretty much means any likelihood above zero could be included. And there are people being committed in the state of Texas right now who actually, by all actuarial accounts, would it seem to have a likelihood of recidivism less than the average defendant who's released free onto the street. So I don't know if you know anything about that, if your guest knows anything about that, but based on the actual practice of the law in Texas, it appears that they've significantly lowered the threshold relative to that being used in many other states with similar laws.
And John, let me ask you, since you do conduct interviews with these types of felons, so it's violent sex offenders, but some of these people have been convicted of downloading child porn. Does that count as a violent sex offender?
No, it does not. In the law is very specific about what it considers a sexually violent offense. So you actually have to have contact offenses to be considered a sexually violent offense. So not to say that it's not obviously harmful for someone to be downloading child porn or to be feeding into that industry, but that does not qualify as a sexually violent offense. So if that were the only behavior that someone was at risk of committing, they would not be eligible for commitment under the law because they would, if they're not believed to actually be at risk of an actual sexually violent contact offense, then the simple fact of downloading pornography, adult or child for that matter, would not be a sexually violent offense.
All right. Thank you for those comments, John. So, Senator Whitmire, what about the level of if someone is likely to commit the crime again and what John was talking about?
I appreciate his comments. I'm certain it's going to be reviewed. There again, if you misjudge the agency's practice or misapply it, I guess would be the better term, you're going to jeopardize the entire program. And I do believe now that we've delved into some of the decision-making of this agency and the prosecutor that works with the agency and the judge who hears the cases, it does seem like they're very, very aggressive in their interpretation, and they continue, and that's kind of got my attention 2 years ago. They've continued to ask for more slots. Like I said, when this started in 98, it was for a very, very hardcore 10 to 20 people that were determined to be the worst of the worst. Now they're up to 50 people a year. They're using each and every slot, so it's kind of like, you build a prison, they'll find someone to place in the prison. You build this program with 50 available slots, they'll find you 50. So they're jeopardizing the program if they're overusing it. It's going to be under review by experts. I think we're going to actually review the judge's jurisdiction, maybe get it out of just where one court, who the judge has made some very shocking comments publicly about what his role is in this process. He uses the same jurors for every hearing, which I find and discovered. When I discovered, I found it to be unbelievable. So, no, we've got a lot of scrutinizing to do, and if you don't, you're going to lose what I think, if used properly, most of us would think is a good program.
Let's get Jesse on the line. Jesse has called in. Jesse, welcome to The Source.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good.
I've had two brothers that have been in jail for child molestation. One is in prison now, and the other one got out, and, you know, he moved to California. How that was allowed to happen, I don't know. My other brother, his parole law, the prison sends me a letter that's by request, which all families should investigate in and find out that, you know what, they do have input, whether they feel, and they could come across with some information that would let them know that, they, you know, we feel that he should stay in there. For six years, I have always told him that, no, he does not deserve to be out, and for the reasons I've mentioned. On the other hand, I think what the state should look into is occupying one of these shut down military bases, enclose it, and, you know, actually build a small city in here and let them work their way to pay off debt, you know, establish a place to where they can live and work and pay taxes, and to where they can, you know, do work for the city or the state or what have them. I'm not talking about a chain gang. I'm talking about actual jobs to where they can get themselves right. But the fact of the matter is, and I've, you know, been involved with it, this is all something that happened when I came back out of the military, and I found all this was happening in our family. You know, my father's been a child molester and has never been turned in, and the whole family banned me because I wanted to put him in prison. You know, there's certain things that, you know, you can and can't do. But the fact of the matter is that we know this is a disease that cannot be controlled. And, you know, research has established that fact. You cannot recuperate child molesters.
All right, Jesse, thank you for calling in. And I'm sorry to hear about your family there. Let me ask you there, Mike Ward, Houston Chronicle, senior bureau reporter from Austin. There have been escapes from this system that we have here. I'm reading that Michael Albert Young in 2012, he escaped. He just snipped off his ankle bracelet and he just walked on out. That there have been 12 offenders escaped as of 2012. So it's also, this is not a secure system.
Right. The system was set up to be, it was called an outpatient program, and everybody who's in it, all the offenders who are in it, have to wear ankle monitoring bracelets. A large number of them are housed in halfway houses around Texas, in Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, and El Paso, and others are in county jails and whatnot. The people are taken to therapy once or twice a week. I think the goal of the program, as it was originally set up, is still achievable. But the questions that Senator Whitmire raised about you've got a lot of people who may be in the program who potentially should not be there are probably legitimate legal questions that could endanger the rest of the program.
Senator Whitmire, you've been reported saying that you're going to have to rebuild this program from the ground up, right?
Yes, sir.
So what's that going to mean like?
Build it from the ground up. We have a new director. She's very experienced, working in the area of criminal justice. I think it's probably going to involve a multi-agency effort. TDCJ, the prison system, reviews these people while they're confined. I think they've got to get smart and objective and use truly expert information to determine who should be even considered. And then as you go through the process, you got to look at the judicial decision-making, the judge, et cetera. And then once someone is placed in it, they've got to get real treatment with an at least serious effort of making them become productive workers, taxpayers, perhaps even safely have a reentry program. Obviously, the emphasis
is on public safety. These people have been deemed to be a security concern. So, you know, you just got to be smart in this business, and you obviously have zero tolerance for the conduct of the agency. Placing them in a community, residential community, without any notice. And I would suggest, so what? If they gave notice, the notice would have rejected them. I don't think they belong in a halfway house. Halfway house is for parolees.
Right. So, Senator Whitmire, thank you so much. We're running out of time here. Democrat from Houston, chair of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, Mike Ward, Houston Chronicle, Austin Bureau senior reporter. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.